We are going to finish our class series on Hebrews this week. Last week, we stopped in the middle of the famous faith chapter. We noticed the spin the author of Hebrews put on Moses' motivations, attributing his flight from Egypt as choosing, quote, the disgrace of Christ. And in doing so, he rewrote the Exodus story to suit him, saying that Moses left Egypt not fearing Pharaoh's anger, when the story clearly says that Moses fled because he was afraid. And he didn't come back until 40 years later, when the Lord assured him that all those folks who were hunting for him had died and it was safe to go back. I mean, the story is very explicit about why Moses fled Egypt. And the Hebrew, anyway, this is where we pick the story up today. The author continues to talk about Moses's exploits in faith. He says Moses kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood so the firstborn would not be destroyed. That part is true. This is a reference to the final plague on the Egyptians. When Pharaoh refused to free God's people from slavery, even after nine supernatural plagues, God finally sent a destroying angel. The angel literally passed over the houses of the Hebrews that had been marked with the blood, and God and this angel certainly knew which homes were Egyptian and which homes were Hebrew. God didn't need blood on the door to tell him that. But after the destroyer passed through, everyone could see that the homes marked in advance as Hebrew were the ones that had been spared. The blood was a literal billboard from God to both the Hebrews and to the Egyptians. And after this, by faith, the Hebrews passed through the Red Sea. But when the Egyptians tried to pursue them, they were drowned. And when the Israelites finally did reach the promised land 40 years later, it was by faith that the people marched around the fortress walls of Jericho and the walls fell. And in that mighty fall, Rahab, the prostitute whose home was built actually into the wall itself, Rahab was miraculously spared because earlier she had helped the Israelite spies escape safely with their information. The author says, I don't have time to talk about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets. Now, that is a very interesting selection of people. And remember, he's choosing from the entire Hebrew Bible, and these are the ones he's named: King David, Samuel, who was the last judge of Israel, and all the prophets. I'd absolutely put on the quote faith list. For sure. But these others are doubtful. Gideon was an extremely reluctant hero called by God to defend Israel against marauding enemies. Even he couldn't believe God actually was picking him. It took God several tries to convince him to go. I will say Gideon was in good company, though. The conversation kind of reminded me of but Moses at the burning bush. And like Moses, once he was in, Gideon was all in and went into battle with only the 300 men God chose out of the 32,000 that Gideon had originally drafted. God won the battle with those 300 men, by the way. And then there's Barak, who's on this list. He was a general who refused to go into battle unless the prophetess Deborah went with him. Deborah got so exasperated with him over this that she told him that because of this, he wouldn't get credit for the win. The credit for the win in the battle was going to go to a woman, which it ended up doing. It went to a woman named Yael. But that's another story for another class. You'll find all of these stories in the Joshua Judges Ruth class series. And what about Samson? He was a disaster from the get-go, not doing right, lying, headstrong, not caring about others he might hurt. Very weak in character, although he was tremendously strong in body. He was betrayed by his cunning, power-hungry girlfriend and died a tragic death, never being willing to let God harness the movement of the Holy Spirit in his life. We may be seeing a pattern in this list here. And then there's Jephthah. He brings this all into focus. His story is in Judges 10 and 11. He was an outcast, literally described in the text as the leader of a gang of foolish, worthless, idle men. But they were the best fighters around, and the leaders of Israel begged them to save them from their enemies, and in return, they'd make Jephthah leader of the entire region. Well, Jephthah couldn't resist that offer. And as he left for battle, Jephthah swore to the Lord that whatever came out of his house first after his victory would be sacrificed to God. So, with the help of the Lord, whose intent was to save Israel, not to glorify Jephthah, Jephthah and his band of thugs routed the enemy. So, what was the first thing to run out of the house to greet Jephthah upon his return? His daughter, his only child. What a fool Jephthah was not to foresee this. His daughter couldn't believe it when she heard what her father had vowed, and she asked for 2 months to roam the hills and mourn, never being able to marry before submitting herself for sacrifice. She was most certainly a teen. Perhaps even betrothed. She was clearly old enough to know exactly what was happening. And after 2 months, she came back. She came back. And her father slaughtered her as an offering to God. This is anathema to God. God is very clear that we are never, ever to sacrifice humans. He doesn't even want animals, but for sure not our children. How dare the author of Hebrews list Jephthah as a giant of faith because he mourned his daughter and does not mention either Jephthah's monumental sin against God nor the incredible, faithful courage of his daughter. Submitting to what she too believed must be done because of her father's stupid, stupid vow. And really, the same with Abraham and Isaac. The author never mentions Isaac's faith in being willing to get up on that altar and let his 115-year-old father bind him up with rope. Isaac had already noticed there was no animal brought for the sacrifice. He knew what was up. This offends me so much. If this is what the writer of Hebrews holds up as a shining example of faith, he can take a flying leap as far as I'm concerned. This is not a writer I would ever hang any important theology on. I do not trust him at all. He goes on to list all the gory tortures people of God have endured over the centuries. You can read all about it at the end of chapter 11 if you wish. I, however, am moving on to chapter 12. Therefore, he says, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, lay aside every burden and sin that is so easy to get tangled up in, and run the appointed race with endurance, perseverance, and patience. And there you go. In the middle of all that bad theology is a gorgeous ray of light that is a truth with a capital T. Beautiful. He goes on to say, to keep your eyes fixed firmly on Jesus. Remember all that he endured so you will not grow weary and faint-hearted. And then he ruins this beautiful exhortation with some more of his particular brand of theology. He says, remember, God disciplines those he loves. Endure hardship as discipline. God is testing you as children so we may share in his holiness. See to it that no one falls short of the grace of God. Sigh. What can I tell you? You should recognize this author's particular lens by now. This is some of that awful wrapping paper that has God is harsh and mean stamped all over it. I recognize this wrapping paper, actually. It was used all the time in my family of origin, where harshness was called love. This teaching bears very bad fruit. In Romans 3, Paul said, we all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. The glory of God, not the grace of God. We could never attain the glory of God, of course, but there's no way we can fall short of the grace, favor, and kindness of God. God's grace is bestowed freely on us and is nothing we ever have to worry about falling short of somehow. In fact, Paul follows that statement that saying that while we fall short of the glory of God, he says he follows that by saying we are all justified freely by his grace. Paul gets it right. The author of Hebrews gets it wrong here. The author then gives an example of someone he sees as falling short of the grace of God. So we already know he's on shaky ground, but here's his example. And it's the story of Esau, who was always doing something to show how much he despised God. He sold his birthright to his twin brother Jacob for a meal. A birthright isn't just your inheritance, it's your rightful place as head of the family. And that was a big deal since Esau's grandfather was Abraham. Yes, that Abraham, the one through whom all the whole world is blessed. So Esau is portrayed through the Bible as short-sighted and selfish. But his brother Jacob wasn't really much better. Jacob was sneaky and deceitful. And ended up stealing Esau's blessing as well from their dying father. But Esau realized later how badly he had hurt his parents by how he acted, and he actually tried to make amends. And after some years, Esau forgives Jacob and they bury their father together. Deuteronomy 2 tells us that God gives Esau his own land, the land of Seir. And later, Esau's descendants are hostile to their brothers, the Israelites, and God is not pleased. Things do not go well for them. And this is where one of the last prophets famously observes, Jacob have I loved, and Esau I have hated. Well, that whole sentence had to do with the obstinance of Esau's descendants and their active hostility towards their brothers, the Israelites. But as for Esau himself, God clearly forgave him and blessed him with his own inheritance and cleared it of enemies for him and told the Israelites not to invade Esau's country. So for the author of Hebrews to go hold up Esau as an example of a godless one who has fallen short of the grace of God is disingenuous, I think. Esau is actually the very picture of the expansiveness of God's grace. So let's see what the author of Hebrews throws at us next. You, he says, have not come to a mountain set on fire, to darkness and storm, to a voice so fearsome those who heard it could not bear its word. Well, that would be Mount Sinai and the story of the law being given to Moses while the Israelites trembled with terror at the foot of the mountain. You have come to Mount Zion, the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, where myriads of angels assemble, the church of the firstborn, to the righteous who have been made perfect, to God, the judge of all, and to Jesus Christ, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkling of blood that is even better than Abel's. He had to get that blood part in there, didn't he? But quite a contrast to Mount Sinai, the same, but far more glorious. He continues, see to it you do not refuse him. Those earthly ones, meaning Mount Sinai, the folks at Mount Sinai, did not escape. So how could we escape when warned from heaven itself? Back then, the earth shook when he spoke, but now he promises one more time, I will shake not only the earth, but also heaven. Therefore, the author says, what will remain is that which cannot be shaken, and that will be our inheritance. And since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, may we have grace that we may serve in a way well pleasing to God with reverence and awe. For our God is a consuming fire. That last bit is a quote from Deuteronomy 4:24, where the Lord warns against worshiping any other gods or forgetting the covenant. Where he warns that all that other worship is idolatry. And so we come to the final chapter of Hebrews. It is a surprisingly gentle chapter. Love each other, he says. Show hospitality to strangers. Remember those in prison. Keep the marriage bed pure, for God will judge the sexually immoral and the adulterer. Let the manner of your life be free from the love of money. Be content with the present. Now, I love this. Let the manner in which you live be free from striving consumerism and status seeking. Stop all that. Be content with the present. For he himself said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And there it is. Another golden nugget in Hebrews. This was the promise that Moses spoke to the Israelites just before he died, as they trembled at the edge of the promised land, knowing they'd be going in without their fearless leader. This was the promise of God to these trembling people when the path ahead was full of giants and fortresses set against them. Remember this. And be content with the present. God will be with you in whatever the future holds. The author continues, stay free of the love of money. Imitate the faith of your leaders. Obviously, the writer has in mind godly leaders. He's talking about church leaders here. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So don't be led astray by strange and different teachings. Your heart is strengthened by grace, not by food that's not made any better simply because it's been, quote, walked around. The author seems to mean food that's been offered as part of a ritual under the law. Certainly, Christians already know they don't need their food blessed in a certain way, but at the same time, even in the author's time, it was deemed acceptable for Christians to eat food devoted to idols. So his point must be that even though it is acceptable to eat food sacrificed under the law, that alone doesn't have any special benefit. He says, the blood of animals sacrificed under the law is brought into the holy place, but the carcasses are burned outside the camp. And so also Jesus suffered outside the city gate so that he might sanctify the people with his own blood. And thus we too should go out to him outside the camp to share in his disgrace. Through Jesus, in all things, we should offer a sacrifice of praise to God, the fruit of lips confessing his name, not forgetting to share and to do good. These are the sacrifices that please God. Obey your leaders and be submissive. Again, he obviously means godly faith leaders here. Be submissive, for they are watching over your souls as if they have to give an account for them. Make this a joy for them and not a burden. And now, may the God of peace, having brought Jesus Christ, the great shepherd, out from the dead by the blood of the eternal covenant, equip you in every good thing so you can do his will, working in us what is pleasing before him, through Jesus Christ, to whom be the glory forever and ever. Amen. And aside from some personal notes and a self-congratulatory pat on the back, thus ends the book of Hebrews. I'll be interested to hear what you think of it overall. In our breakout groups today, we're going to go back and ponder that faith chapter just a little bit more. Okay, so we talked about faith, and the question was, looking back over scripture, and that would include the New Testament as well as the Hebrew Bible, what stories of great faith stand out to you? Who would you have put on the faith list?
Well, the ones that you mentioned was Abraham and Isaac. That was about as big a faith as I can think of.
Right?
We came up with a few.
Okay.
Mary Magdalene, Timothy's mother and grandmother, Lydia. We came up with a lot of women, ladies. And Paul.
Oh, yeah, Paul.
Who else did we come up with, Rhonda? From the Bible. Was that it?
Think that's it.
That's great. Julia came up with
David. I always think of David. Because he was so imperfect, but always yearned to be better and to have God's grace. Lot, I thought that was a lot of faith.
Oh, wow, yeah. I like that. A lot of faith.
bomb. And then Rahab and Adam and Eve, because they learned about faith real fast.
Didn't have much choice, did they?
No, they didn't. And I had Mordecai on my list. Mordecai was Esther's uncle.
Oh, yeah.
He was the one who kept batting her back into the game and saying, honey, you need to stand up and do what is right. Don't think you're going to get saved just because you're queen. You
Yeah.
need to go back in there and do this. But at the same
For
time,
such a time as this.
such a time, you were here for a reason, girl, and you stood right outside those gates day and night. And it didn't matter to him, what people thought or what trouble he might get into. So he came immediately to mind for me. Anybody
I'm
else?
sorry, you mentioned Mordecai that put her neck
Pardon?
out. Esther's another one that put her
Yeah.
neck out.
She did. She had to be pushed. She kicked in the butt by her uncle, but she did do it.
She did do it. And
Yep.
a couple we had was, well, my first one that came to mind was Jesus. Duh.
Oh,
And then we also came up with Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene,
Yeah, got her.
and the disciples themselves,
Oh,
because
yeah,
they
we
were
said them
asked to
too.
leave everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of them.
They pretty much had to do it on faith because they didn't have a clue otherwise. They had no clue
Yeah.
what was going on. They only really had faith.
About
And I had.
Meshach and Abednego and the third one.
Oh, yeah, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
And Daniel.
And Daniel. Man, I named my own son after that one. Yeah. There's with so many great examples, right?
Jonathan.
Pardon?
Jonathan.
Jonathan, yeah.
Yeah.
He was between a rock and a hard place, that one was. Lumar, did you have one that you wanted to add? I thought I saw you blink there.
We were just, I think I'm the one that mentioned the disciples and what it must have been like for them to just leave everything.
Yeah.
And, I said, if Jesus walked up to me today, I mean, I guess if I knew it was Jesus, of course I would go. But, they didn't have a whole lot of information about him, I don't think. But yet they just, on faith, literally left their nets, left everything, and just followed him. What tremendous faith
Yeah.
that required.
No background check, no Google. Yeah.
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 How about Stephen?
Oh, yes, the first martyr, Stephen, who stood up with the men, had stones in their hands, and he rebuked them and told them their own history of God and said, "This is what I represent. Go ahead and stone me." And they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I have a weird question that came up into my little brain. When the disciples left and followed Jesus, because they don't mention like women and children that haven't, that aren't at this caliber, is it possible that they were part of the huge crowd that was following behind the disciples and Jesus? The
Yes,
families were part of that crowd.
absolutely. I would assume so. And we know Peter was married,
Yeah.
and we also know that he lived with his co-workers and their father and Zebedee, and so he lived with James and John, Zebedee, and there were undoubtedly women in that household.
Yeah.
And when the disciples left to follow Jesus, that's a very small country. It's
Yeah.
not like they didn't get to go home ever again. It's not like
Yeah.
Paul, where he went like way far, but undoubtedly they would have had families that either followed them or ostracized them.
Yeah. That's weird. I just, I hadn't even thought about their families until who was in my group? I don't remember. Mentioned them.
I never thought about it until this minute. It's so interesting. I never thought about that.
I
So
hadn't either.
it would have been a bigger group than just the 12.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There are several women named who were actually disciples as well, Joanna and Mary Magdalene and others who actually supported Jesus' ministry with their independent funds. And they would
Yeah.
have been in those crowds and following him around, and as well as all the local people. But yeah.
Yeah, it was
Nicodemus,
Pam mentioned that.
right?
That's a good
He wasn't as bold in his faith as Mordecai was, but he did have faith. He was the one that came at night to Jesus and said, "Are you who you say you are?"
Gail said something a few minutes ago about they either had faith or they've ostracized them. Isn't that
Yeah.
something that's still happening now,
Oh yeah.
that we're dealing with? I hadn't thought of that, but it's always been the way.
It's something that we came up with in our group. We decided that faith is not doctrine. Faith is not your beliefs. Faith is your relationship to God and believing that He is who He says He is, and that He will do what He says He would do, and that He keeps His promises. And it has nothing to do with your doctrine.
It has nothing to do with all the rest of it. That what you named, I wish I had on a plaque. That is exactly it. That is exactly it. And we kind of get towards that as we go through the questions. The next question was, who in the world since the days of Christ, and especially during your own lifetime, has been a shining example of faith to you. What was it about them that makes the word faithful come to mind as an outstanding characteristic? You should
Rhonda,
have a
you had a
number
good
of
one.
faults. Pardon?
Rhonda had a good one.
Okay.
Jimmy Carter?
Oh,
Yeah.
good one.
That's the one. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think of him and we were talking about, his presidency. He just, I mean, throughout his presidency, he led and but yet I always think of him being, he's so faithful to his wife, faithful to his family. These pictures of them walking down the street. He went back to the home where they've lived for so many years, and then, you see, I didn't forgot to mention this, but you see the clip of where he asked her to marry him, and what's the best day of your life? Reporters thinking something with president, and he said the day she agreed to marry me. I mean, just
I remember that.
so you just throughout his presidency and his life. I mean, he's just one that, and then, I mean, his Habitat for Humanity and all that too, but he lived, then we were talking about the doctrine thing too, but he walked the talk, I guess.
Exactly. Who
That's
else
a
do you
great
tell?
example. That's a great example. And another one, since we're talking about presidents, I think another one would be Abraham Lincoln. And then he's not a super religious person, but he had a deep faith. I'm reading a biography of him right now, and he had a faith that people don't hear much about.
And he had to have, because you saw the fruit of it in his presidency. You saw the wisdom, the deep, silent, still wisdom that is a fruit of the Spirit.
And that's it, answering like the last question that you asked, but that's kind of what we talked about with Jimmy Carter and the other ones that we talked about, is that it wasn't the words that came out of their mouth so much as the actions and the way they lived their life.
That's what we came up with too.
Yeah.
Julia, you want to?
I thought closer to home with my people. There's a couple friends that I have. They're named Jag and Linda Chima, and they took me in when I fled my first husband from, I lived in Dallas and they were in Corpus Christi. And Jag was my ex-sister-in-law's husband's college roommate.
Oh my.
Never met them before in my life. And they took me and my baby in, and I had just left the Catholic Church because I had received some advice that did not sit well with me. And I had nowhere, I was floundering. I had faith, but I had just walked away from what anchored my faith. And they took me in, and I went with their church. I was Southern Baptist. I became immersion baptized, and I lived that life until I was ostracized years later after my second divorce. And but they didn't talk to me about faith. As a matter of fact, Jag is Hindu and would never make a public profession of faith because it was an insult to his parents. But he lived that example, and they nurtured me in so many ways. And then I picked my son David because he still doesn't even acknowledge his cancer. He just has so much faith that God had him through it. And I don't agree with this theology again, but I believe his faith is so strong, it carries him. And then my last one was anyone of faith is someone I admire because you live that, you know? Yeah.
I had put on my list, I also thought closer to home, like Julia. I thought of Paul and Hope Phillips, who Paul left his job selling Lamborghinis and became a missionary. He married Hope, who is an orphan and HIV positive in Africa. She had a young child. And they have spent the entire rest of their lives pulling HIV positive women and their children off the streets and giving them homes and teaching them how to teaching them the skills they need to support themselves, teaching them nutrition, educating them and their children, just every
Wow.
it's just and they just live hand to mouth, and there's always a gap, you know, between what they've got and what they need, and every single cent goes to, you know,
Others.
this large family. They see it as a large family, and I've watched them
Wow.
stick with this year after year after year. It may be approaching 10 years that I've been watching them, and I've watched these children grow from elementary school age to university school age, you know, and I just see all this glorious fruit. And for me, that attribute was the perseverance. It was the absolutely hard stop on wealth and laying it every single bit of their life out for somebody else, which is amazing. And I don't agree with his politics. I, you know, just all kinds of things I don't agree with, but these folks have faith, and faith with boots on. And the other one that I added was my grandparents, who just inspired me with their Bible study and their faith. And again, I have grown from that place of theology of where they were. But man, when I think of their faith, the image of shining, it's just shining, and it attracted me because it was shining.
We came up with one a little closer to home too,
Okay.
and at the risk of embarrassing her, Gail, we said you.
I did too. And she said, no, you can't. And I said, yes, I can.
Yes, we can, and we did. So get over it.
My close to home one was I already told Gail and it him the about my doctor that saved my face. He didn't, I mean, he was on vacation. He didn't need to put his name in a hat to come in if somebody got hurt, and he didn't have to give it to us free. And to me, that,
I forget where you came up, but you came up in our discussion, Renee. Just
Yeah,
I
something
did.
you had said. Yeah, something you had said about, oh, it was because of the adversity you're facing over the what you found out you owe in taxes, and about how you're able to just simply face it, you know?
And be joyful today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's we God works in weird ways. He does, because when we first found out we owed that much to the IRS, I was like, okay, you know, why us? Why is this? Why that? You know, and then we get to thinking about it, and we got to talking about it. And if Jeff and I wouldn't, if the mistake hadn't happened with our insurance, Jeff wouldn't have had the surgery he had that was he had to have, and I wouldn't have my cataract surgery that I had. It all happened at that same time that the insurance was messed up.
That's
And
it.
it's just, it's a lot. It would have cost us a lot more than what the IRS wants. So it's a lot easier to swallow that pill when you know that, hey, good things happened during that time.
That's marvelous. And I saw your hand go up. Turn your mic on, though. I
Easier said than done.
know, right?
There we go.
Okay, there you
Yeah. So when we look at everyday examples, I want to go back to Anne Frank, whose heart was pure
go.
that no matter what, she saw the good in people. And you look at the people who risk their lives sheltering Jews. The people nowadays, so the guy who sets up my air conditioner, because we live in primitive land with evaporative cooling, lives in this crazy town, which even today the police don't go into. It's where the outlaws live. It's middle of desert. Many of these guys have, trailers set up that aren't even leveled, so they're crooked, and there's some drug dealers, there's some gang members, et cetera, has protected immigrants for the last, who knows, 40 years, and finds shelter for them and finds clothes, and the crazy thing is, did some time in the pen, so he's on both sides of the fence. But I look at the people who through their actions, and that's what I really feel is talk is cheap as hell. It's what you do for others. My friend Walter is an atheist. We argue up and down about whether God exists or not. But Walter will see an injured animal in the street, pick it up, take it to the emergency clinic, pay the bill, find its owners. God and miracles are around us every day.
They are. Yes, they absolutely are.
I would be very curious to know what is the God that he does not believe in? I mean, he obviously believes in love. To me, God is love, the spirit of love. And so I would be curious to see what exactly do you not believe in?
Does the presence of God in our lives open us to love? Because God knows I'm hearing God's name used in hateful manners nowadays. So I don't know. And he's a trippy dude too, because his dad's like me. His dad's from New York, and mom is Japanese and was a war bride. His dad met her over in Japan. So Walter went through a lot of, tough times being a half breed. And he's also very, very smart. And sometimes, it's interesting, those really intellectual, where was I going on this? What?
A great
Walter.
Bible class,
He's a trippy dude, but does God bring us love necessarily, or is it an innate thing inside of ourselves to love?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really perceptive question because I think I have talked m many times about how the Holy Spirit dwells inside of us like a guitar string, and it resonates when we encounter what is good, what is God, and it resonates with warning when we encounter what is not, what is dark. And to Woody's point, we can't go by the labels. We can't, and so often mothers will come to me and say, and just grief-stricken because they're kids have wandered from God and left the church, and I tell them, they were probably right to run from that particular version of what was labeled as God or what was being sold. It goes back to our lesson, harshness being sold as love. There's a lot of that, unfortunately. Okay, moving on to our very last.
I'm sorry. I wanted to compliment Anne on her example of World War II. To me, that's a great example. All the people who risked their lives to save or rescue some Jews from the Nazis. That's just a wonderful example. Thank you.
So think about the characteristics you came up with just now. Did they have more to do with words spoken or some other way their faithfulness was conveyed? And I think we have all agreed that it had to do with how it was conveyed, not what they're saying, right? Right. And the last question is, are you able to see yourself as faithful in a similar way?
Most of us answered sometimes.
I had a hard time with it too. And Gail gave me a beautiful example of how I see myself, you know? And I always feel like there's more I can do. There's more that should be done. And what Gail was suggesting to me was that I'm on a ladder. And I'm about halfway up, and all I see is the top of the ladder and where I want to be. And that the way I'm there, I just don't see what's below that I've done. And that was a beautiful vision of that. And I still struggle, but it was a nice perspective.
But things
Yeah.
have changed.
Yeah.
And what happened to that ladder? Do you
It
remember?
fell down and I could see where I'd been.
The ladder laid down flat so that rather than trying to carry a load up and just holding on tight, trying not to fall off and it getting to be more and more and more of a strain, like a bungee cord, the ladder just gently laid flat on the ground. And now the pressure was not there. And she was free to turn around and see the blessing that she has been to so many people. She was free to look where she is and see the blessing that she is to us now. And she was free to see that, oh, there's some places I can be a blessing, but I'm not, it's not a strain. I can just step over there.
Nice.
It's not an achievement. It's a perspective.
Not to keep focusing on World War II, but at the end of the movie Schindler's List, I don't know if you saw that movie, but
Oh, yeah.
he saved hundreds of Jews. But at the end of the movie, he breaks down because he said, I could have saved so many more.
And there is always that, you know, there is always that we could have known what we know now sooner. Well, maybe not, you know.
Yeah,
So,
I feel like the best people always feel that way about themselves. If you read, Paul would say the same thing about himself. People that we hold up as good examples and stuff, and we say, oh, they saved so many. And they're always like, I didn't do enough. I could have done more.
Yeah, and I guess that I have come to a place, a realization, at least in my own life, that I'm not the one doing the saving. That the goal does not belong to me. It is not set by me. It does not belong to me. That how many people come to know God because of my life is really none of my business. That my business is to simply stand here and be faithful in the doing and the speaking and the walking and the listening.
Wow.
You know, when we all mentioned Gail, one of the things I shared with her was I've known Gail for a very long time. I've seen her in great joy, like the day of her ordination. I've seen her be just a blessing to people. And then I've seen her struggle. And when she's, whether she's in a place of great joy and positivity, or whether she's dwelling in grief, she always does it with such grace and
Yes.
compassion and understanding. And she reaches out to help others. And
100%.
that is something that I find very inspiring. And I'm
Yes.
happy to be your friend. Oh, pretty.
Hugs to everybody. You want us there. I
Yeah,
want
we
us.
mentioned also in our group Mary, who isn't here, and I miss
Planning
her.
to
And
be here this week. She was planning to be here this week. So,
okay.
and she is watching the videos, so you can speak to her.
No.
No.
Okay, well, Mary, we said you're an example of faith, so yeah.
Yes. I agree.
For sure.
There's so
We love
many.
you, Mary, and we miss you.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I love about this group more than anything is I know not everybody has the same biblical view
Or foundation.
or the same foundation, that's a better word, but we all are at this point where we're willing to learn. And we have been from the beginning. And that
Yeah.
is so inspiring to me that I couldn't, everybody's, it doesn't matter what particular thing like what church you go to or what denomination, that doesn't matter to us. It just matters about learning and being a faithful group of people who care about each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rhonda said something along those lines too, which I thought was really cool. Rhonda mentioned that what, if I say this wrong, Rhonda, help. What
Yeah.
she thinks of as faith is growth.
I like those two words
I like
together.
that.
Rhonda, can you expound on
Oh.
what you said earlier?
I don't know if I can remember. No, well, what Renee was talking about, we all have different, we learned religion, whatever beliefs, but it when be faithful, it's not on that doctrine, it's on the fact that, some people say, oh, you're different than how you were. How can you think this now based on that? And it's like, well, having an open mind, learning, living, just having different experiences and moving in a way that's more faithful, not based on this doctrine or that doctrine or doctrine learned along the way. So, I mean, it is along the way, but not having that narrow view of
Not
this is how I
nailed
raise this
down,
one.
sealed up. Jesus said the Spirit blows where it will. Just
Gail, question. Anne mentioned the person who's an atheist, but yet she sees faith in him. I was thinking, as we were naming people of faith, I was thinking of somebody like Mahatma Gandhi. And there are people who are not Christians, who are of other philosophies, other doctrines, other religions, other worldviews. Just it came to mind to me, I guess a lot of the people I'm thinking of are Indian, because my son had a high school teacher who I think was one of the greatest people of faith I've ever known, but she was Hindu. Is that legit to be
Well,
looking at people who are not?
Jesus said he had sheep of other folds.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that.
And he didn't expand on that. He didn't try to describe to the disciples what those other folds were or who those people were. He just said they exist. And in the end, there are prophecies throughout the Bible that in the end, everybody's going to know God, from the least of them to the greatest.
And they will know him so well because he's going to write himself into their hearts in such a way that nobody even needs to have to be taught about God anymore because they will all know him. And that all was not conditional. It didn't, wasn't restrictive. It was all. And so I know that when I go to heaven and we're hanging out waiting for the parade to start, I'm going to line up behind Jesus. And it's really none of my business what where God has put other people. I definitely go by Jesus' way of evaluating, which is look at the fruit. Look at the fruit. I look at the fruit. And that is the only thing I focus on. He said to love your neighbor. He didn't say just to love your Christian neighbor. There wasn't even such a thing as Christian at that point. He said to love your neighbor. Well, harshness is not love. Rejection
Amen.
is not love. Degrading and debasing them and ridiculing them and eschewing them, rejecting them, barring them off. That is not love. I'm going to follow love. And
I
on
know you can't see me, but I'm smiling.
so on that little soapbox, why don't we call it a day? And I will see you next week.